are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, October 10th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Ford announces massive layoffs because of Trump's Chinese tariffs. Meanwhile, the assault on voting rights spreads across the country, aided and abetted by the Supreme Court. Did Trump know of the Saudis' plan to kill a U.S. resident journalist? And are we done with the Saudis quite yet? Hurricane Michael poised to be the worst storm to hit Florida Panhandle ever. And the Trump administration is mum on the IPCC report, but the EPA chief did post Pizzagate and racist tweets. So we got that going for us. The VA refuses to hand over documents about outside businessmen who were sort of running the VA for a while. And the Dems force a Senate vote on Trump's junk insurance plans. And with Kavanaugh seated, polls show that Democrats are energized for the midterms. Trump laments Medicare for All, warns it will give Medicare to socialism.
Right. Exactly.
And the case to cancel all student debt. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. It is Wednesday, hump day. That's what we call it around here. We didn't coin that phrase. Can we turn down that fan a little bit? Just a little bit. It's almost mid-October, so of course it's a balmy 75 degrees in New York City. You all know, right? I mean, this is pretty basic stuff, but why global warming will increase the severity of storms like Hurricane Michael, right? I mean, I don't need to. Well, there's always a chance we have some conservatives listening. And if we do, by any chance, have any listening, please, by all means, call in 646-257-3920. We'll try and get to calls a little bit early today if we can. But this is pretty basic stuff. The way that moisture gets up into the air is it evaporates from bodies of water. And if the water already is warmer than, well, if the water is warm, then the ability to it evaporate is actually increased. You will notice this if you boil some water and put a glass cover on the pot, you'll see that the water actually evaporates and hits the top of the pot, the lid. Well, when the water's warmer, that sends more water and up into the air, and of course, also heat creates energy, and then you get a more powerful storm that whips with more.
Wait, slow water. Down. There's a relationship between energy and heat. You're saying?
That's true. That's true. So.
Science report up in here.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I mean, Saul has a book where it actually just, I think it's like the magic school bus, and it talks about how, you know, the water cycle. And
I think so December, it's going to be pretty cold around here. So,
yeah, I guess there's no global warming as soon as we see any of the. But with that said, I know that sounds a little bit condescending, but. I want to give you the President of the United States on his response about the IPCC report. This is the United Nations intergovernmental report on climate change, and it involves hundreds, if not thousands, of scientists across the country, across the globe. And we mentioned yesterday, obviously, if you listened to the program and you did not decide to check out and you're still with us, you heard yesterday that this report is pretty dire. And we have about 10 years or so if we are going to in any way mitigate the implications of the globe warming. And Donald Trump took it all in stride and apparently thinks that the report is actually just, maybe he takes it a little too literally when he hears people saying it paints a dire picture. Here he is.
The UN report this week warning about climate change.
It was given to me.
All right, pause it 1 second. For those of you who are listening, he's asked the question, are you aware of the climate change report that was issued by the IPCC? Here, and then he responds.
It was given to me. It was given to me. And I want to look at who drew it, you know, which group drew it, because I can give you reports that are fabulous and I can give you reports that aren't so good. But I will be looking at it, absolutely.
What do you think about him?
I can't even understand that. Well, first of all, it is the IPCC. So it's the Intergovernment Panel on Climate Change. So that's who drew it. I don't know what drew it means.
Well, they give him all of his reports in cartoon form.
That's right. So I see what you're saying. So he's like, I got someone drew a picture, literally drew a picture. And it's I get to look at it. I get to see who drew it. And
in one picture, the sun had a frowny face, but I have another picture where the sun was wearing sunglasses.
So you have to weigh the evidence.
I imagine it is like someone drew a picture of a guy walking on a street and there's like a manhole and down at the bottom, like pointy things, and he's about to fall in. That's the way I would have represented that to the president.
But there's another picture where Mar-a-Lago is worth more money than Buckingham Palace.
Yes, so we'll see.
Got to think about things.
That's less than encouraging. Let's start here, because what's been fascinating over the past week is, and the Republicans are quite good at this, creating this notion that somehow a vote against Kavanaugh was going to be detrimental to their electoral chances. Now, Susan Collins had to make a decision, and I'm not convinced that John McCain passing away didn't greatly change the calculation for someone like Lindsey Graham and for Susan Collins. Like, I don't think it was a coincidence that Graham had his sort of showboating moment where he
2020
became
primary.
Well, I think it's a 2020 primary, but I think it's also a question of branding. I think there is an awareness that, like, they can't, there is not the same opportunity to be this type of senator. Like, it doesn't have any value anymore. It doesn't, there is, you know, with John McCain, to the extent that there was any, it was a couple of feathers at the edge of a wing that was pretending to be something that really doesn't exist in the Republican Party anymore. John McCain, when he left, that coalition, you know, lost a significant percentage of the people who were in it, right? Like, I mean, to the extent that there was one, was there three people in that sort of wing of the, you know, you lost 33% of it. And so Graham went his direction, and I think Collins also made the same assessment, that there is no room, there's no path for me within the Republican Party to maintain even my fear of moderation. And, you know, we saw her speech, which it seemed like, she, you know, let her talk for another 10 minutes and she'd be talking about Pizzagate. But the the conventional wisdom was that the Kavanaugh nomination had energized Republicans. And it may have. And there were early reports that the Democrats were worried what would happen if Kavanaugh was not confirmed. And the Republicans, they were worried if they didn't pass Kavanaugh that it would hurt them. Well, new polling out now shows that 46% of voters said the Senate made the wrong decision in approving of the Kavanaugh. 40% said it was the right to elevate him to the high court. Now, this is a national poll. So, you know, in some respects, it doesn't matter because there's no national election.
Yeah, it's a good thing they don't decide things by the popular vote.
Well, the thing is that we only have state elections, right? I mean, we don't have, there's no national election in the off year. So really, it's more important what any specific state says or what any specific congressional district says. But this gives you a broad sense of what's going on.
But for general Democratic purposes, it's not looking good.
What's not like, looking good in terms of...
Just one more example of why the Supreme Court is not in any way a Democratic institution, right?
Well, of course it's not a Democratic institution. In fact, half the members now, or at least... is it half the members or one-third of the members? Four people, I guess, have been appointed by presidents who did not win the popular vote. I mean, aside from not being Democratic in the sense that nobody elects them, we have a Senate which 51% of the Senate is controlled by something like 18% of the population of the United States. Yeah, it is. Senate's also not particularly Democratic either.
It's like that was anti-democratic to the power of anti-democratic.
Right. And it was set up that way. I mean, it wasn't until the 17th Amendment that we had even direct elections for the Senate. So three out of four Democrats say they're very motivated to turn out and vote in the midterms. 68% of the Republicans say they're very motivated. That's a substantial difference. And there's no reason to believe that a month from now, Democrats are going to be any less motivated. There's reason to believe that Republicans could be less motivated simply because they get further away from their success here.
The Democrats in North Dakota are really trying to hit Heidi Heitkamp with when she filmed her ad saying that she wasn't going to support Kavanaugh. Like, did she do it before or after the investigation? That's how they're trying to keep the issue alive. It's very desperate.
The Republicans are trying to.
Sorry.
And now the problem is that some of those red states, some of those red states, there's just more Republicans there, and they're more energized. There is some evidence that Heidi Heitkamp helped herself, and where folks like Kristen Sinema and Ralph Phil Bredesen hurt themselves by saying that were they in the Senate, they would have voted to confirm Kavanaugh. Manchin, it's hard to know, but I would imagine.
Can't touch me.
Yeah.
Go screw yourself.
Yeah. I mean, Manchin won his primary fairly handily. I think something
she
like
got about 30% of the vote. So, and in the state that Bernie won, there probably is some appetite to the more in some areas that are to the left of him. But he actually, if you watch him, he does a pretty good job of pretending that he cares about that stuff too.
Yes.
There's the reason Kincaid, he's so popular.
I think I spoke to Bob Kincaid from Head On at Netroots Nation, and he made a point of saying, you know, you can't trust Manchin because he will just sell you out in a heartbeat. And I think that's the case. Again, though, I think that if Susan Collins votes against Kavanaugh, Manchin does too. This was sort of a free vote for him at that point. But I think, and he may have made the right calculation in terms of not being abandoned by his, you know, or to the extent that he was, he makes it up in independence.
Democrats are much more forgiving than Republicans when you vote the way they don't want you to, right?
I think yes, to a certain extent. I mean, I don't know. It depends on what state you're in. But independent voters, far less supportive of the decision to confirm Kavanaugh. 47% say the Senate erred. 34% said it made the right decision. 36% of voters said it would make them less likely. I mean, I don't see necessarily the evidence of... They may be less forgiving in terms of primaries, but they tend to come out during the general elections.
The Democrats?
No,
the
Republicans. I mean, I don't know if... I think the problem is that in the context of primaries is where you get Republicans are disciplined. And we have yet on the left to match that level of intensity.
Oh, yeah, because they're sociopathic. Like, do you think the Tea Party cared if they were hurting Republicans' chances in general elections?
Yes.
No, they were on a kamikaze mission and they succeeded.
I think they do care, though.
Like,
I mean, they made some miscalculations in specific primaries. But then conversely, there's much more willingness for them to subordinate themselves to things like the court, as an example. And they've not let the perfect be the enemy of the good from their perspective.
Well, not in a primary.
That was in 2010. They made bad calculations.
Yeah,
like, for
you
sure.
Don't.
But
have
they still swept.
People like the guy who called in, like, you shouldn't run against a left candidate against Democrats in primaries because it'll hurt them in the general. They did not think about that.
No, the only problem that the Republicans had when they won. With someone who's maybe like not a witch, or with Aiken. I mean, but I don't know that they didn't care about the chances in the general election as much as I think there is a disconnect from reality with some of those people, where there's a presumption that far more people agree with them than don't in those instances.
Well, it worked out very well for them. No.
I am all for the strategy of primarying, yes, and winning. The problem is that they're at up to this point is that there's not enough people. Like I'm totally in favor of primarying someone like Manchin or Andrew Cuomo or Joe Lieberman. I mean, across the board. The problem is only insofar as like you don't win. I mean, I think the strategy of primarying and disciplining their politicians in that way has been a very effective one for the right, without a doubt. 36% of voters say it would make them less likely, 31% would be more likely to vote for a Kavanaugh-supporting Senate candidate. So, you know, not a huge difference there. And, of course, again, this is national. So in a red state, very different numbers. But while that may help Heidi Heitkamp in the end of the day in North Dakota, there's also a plan B for Republicans in North Dakota. The Supreme Court, I guess as of yesterday, Kavanaugh had not quite been seated or participated in a 4-4 split decision. And when it's a 4-4 split decision at the Supreme Court, if it is deciding a case that has been, which it would have, from a circuit court of appeals, the ruling of the circuit court, the appellate court, stands. And this is a case that came out of North Dakota. North Dakota in 2017, following Heidi Heitkamp's win in 2012, she won by less than 3,000 votes in North Dakota. 750,000 people in that state. I don't know how many are eligible voters. Matt, any guess? Yeah. I mean, obviously a fraction of 750. But 3,000 still represents a pretty incredibly small number of people. There's probably somewhere around 15,000 eligible Native American voters in North Dakota. The vast majority voted for Heidi Heitkamp. In 2017, a voter law ID was challenged by Native residents. In April of this year, a federal district court judge blocked large portions of the law as discriminatory against Native voters. Why? Because the law, as I guess first introduced by the governor, in North Dakota, there is no registration. You just show up to vote and you got to show an ID. So that's not necessarily an unreasonable thing. However, the North Dakota law said that you needed to have a street address on your driver's license. Now, you can get driver's licenses with P.O. boxes, addresses. In rural areas, when I lived upstate, we did not have a street address. We did not get mail delivery there because it was a rural area. You got to go to the post office and get it at the P.O. box. Well, apparently, on rural Indian communities, the Postal Service does not provide residential delivery. So tribal IDs, which are okay to vote with, use P.O. boxes, which under North Dakota law is not sufficient. So the IDs that they have are okay. It's just that the addresses they have are invalid. Yet they don't have residential addresses in terms of postal service. So a federal judge blocked a big part of that law. Because it's discriminatory against Native Americans who live in North Dakota, who almost as a rule do not have a residential address. The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, however, allowed the law to go into effect. So during the primary, the law was not the IDs that had P.O. boxes were okay. Then the Eighth Circuit subsequently allowed the law to go into effect. The Supreme Court, in splitting 4-4, upheld that ruling. Try and guess what the 4-4 split was. How could, though, the Eighth Circuit of Appeals look at this and not see that it's discriminatory in nature? There's no argument. First off, there's no argument that somehow a P.O. box makes it more likely that you could have a fraudulent ID. I guess the argument is that, like, well, you could get three P.O. boxes, but you can only have one address. I don't know who would do that to vote. They haven't found anybody who did that. But let's go over what the composition of the Eighth Circuit Court is, just to give you a sense of why this stuff is relevant. There are 11 active and 6 senior judges. Levansky Smith, he's the chief judge. He was appointed by George W. Bush. Roger Leland Wolman, he was appointed by Ronald Reagan. James Loken was appointed by George Herbert Walker Bush. Steve Culloton was appointed by George W. Bush. Raymond Grunder was appointed by George W. Bush. William Dwayne Benton was appointed by George W. Bush. Bobby Shepard was appointed by George W. Bush. Ralph Erickson was appointed by Trump. Stephen Grass was appointed by Trump. David Strass was appointed by Trump. And Jane Kelly, that's weird, she's the only woman on the entire court, was appointed by Barack Obama. And then, of course, there's six senior judges, and two were appointed by Reagan, and four were appointed by either Poppy or Junior Bush. So that's what happens, folks. That's the way this works.
Well, and maybe if Hillary Clinton had called for a Green New Deal, then you don't have the fucking problem in the circuits.
I've got the map between where Heidi Heitkamp won in 2012. Let's see if we can find the reservations. So here is Fort Berthold. Down here is Standing Rock. Here is Turtle Mountain. This one is Spirit Lake, and then Sisseton down here. And the other thing to notice is this is all the rural areas here. This is farmers, and this is ranchers, basically. And this is the college towns are on this side of the river, too.
So there you have it. I mean, any place that is the bluest places are those reservations. And so this is a law that is completely geared. And, there's one other group, now that you mention it, of people probably in that state who also don't have residential addresses, but rather have P.O. boxes on their IDs. College students. So this is a law that is completely geared towards making sure that Heidi Heitkamp doesn't win by disenfranchising Native voters and young voters in college. And that's it. End of story. Ball game. Doesn't matter.
Oh, don't forget poor people who might be moving from address to address.
Right.
You know who else could get three addresses? Rich people. Maybe they'll address that in the next session.
Unlikely. But the bottom line is, like, this is why structural stuff like this is so important. Because it doesn't matter what Heidi Heitkamp offers in terms of a platform. I mean, I think... I shouldn't say that, but, you know, she can offer all sorts of things to folks, but if they can't vote, they can't vote. So that's the situation in North Dakota. And it very well may be that may be, make the difference. I mean, end of story. Hopefully with a month left, they have made this decision. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I'd be curious if anybody out there who's in that neck of the woods has a sense of what is going to be done. I don't know how you issue 10,000 new IDs with street addresses. I don't know how that happens. But we'll see. We will look into that more and see if there's any other, fix or something like that. But that's basically, that dynamic is what we're seeing across the country. It's no different than what we saw in Wisconsin with Milwaukee. Remember, Wisconsin, Clinton lost by 11,000 votes, 10,000 votes. There was far more than 10,000 votes that were suppressed in Wisconsin because of their voter ID law. Michigan, 7,000. As these laws get passed, there's a reason why they're passed. I mean, there's a reason why they do this. We will keep an eye on what's going on in North Dakota. The other story that's not getting much attention. Donald Trump theoretically, or at least in terms of name, changed the name of NAFTA. We'll see if that passes at any point. But in the meantime, Ford announces that they are laying off almost 12% of their workforce, 24,000 people. That's according to a report from Morgan Stanley. They have lost $1 billion because of the tariffs that President Trump imposed on metals and other goods. In addition, Kansas City Star reported yesterday that Ford has temporarily halted production of transit vans in Clay Como, Missouri. It will leave 2,000 workers idle for about 3 or 4 weeks. The best part of this story, not the best part, the most disturbing part, this is from Fortune.com, incidentally. Despite the news of the layoffs, Ford stock closed down 3.4%. They see the way that works, right? Layoffs are supposed to raise the value of the stocks.
Yep.
That's how exactly how it was written.
Shareholder value. Shareholder value.
What more do you want us to do? We destroyed a bunch of people's livelihoods.
Now, the loss of 24,000 jobs. There is an algorithm out there. I'm not exactly sure what it is off the top of my head, but I was more aware of it back in the day when the auto industry was threatened before the Obama bailout of a couple of these enterprises. And for every person who works in a auto plant, there's at least one or two other people who work in subsidiary jobs that either service the plant or provide for the cars that are being built in and around Michigan or Ohio. I may be making, you know, the upholstery for the seats or something, or a knob for the radio, whatever it is. And so these tariffs, I mean, it may make people feel good, but it's not helping. Lastly, I want to talk about this story, and then maybe we'll go, we'll take a phone call or something. But this Saudi story, well, let's go to this, because this is going to make, this is pretty messed up. We have a situation where, and there's still more, oh yeah, right, I forgot about that. Shoot. Oh, folks, let me tell you about this. Have you ever been to an escape room?
No, I haven't. Have you?
No. Have you guys? There's one off of Flatbush that I've been thinking about going to.
Yeah, I always walk past that.
Little team building exercise.
Oh, my gosh. We should do that.
I think dinner would be better.
I think we should do that. We should videotape it and put it on YouTube. That would be pretty funny, actually.
See who gets the most frustrated with.
I think we're going to have a mandatory escape room thing. If you don't know, I don't know. Are these things in other cities?
Yeah, they're definitely in other cities.
They're kind of a new thing, though, aren't they?
Like, yeah, but they're around. I talked to somebody who did one in Portland the other day.
All right, so apparently they're like, you get locked in a dark room and you got to try and figure out how to get out. But if you love the thrill of an escape room, you know, looking for clues, solving puzzles, now you can bring the mystery home with a Hunt a Killer. Hunt a Killer is a monthly subscription where you become a detective immersed in a murder mystery. Each month, a fictional serial killer will send you cryptic clues, objects, and letters that you can actually use to solve the crime in real time.
Who did it?
I'm glad they indicate that it's a fictional serial killer.
Yeah, that's clarifying.
Right.
If it's not a real one, I'm not interested.
Well, it's so interactive, though, Jamie. It feels real. It's perfect to play solo, on a date, game night with friends, or join the online community and work with other people who are at the same point in the story as you are. This is pretty awesome. I've actually been contemplating getting Myla into something like this. I mean, it's not gory.
Who did it? We need to find out, DC.
Right now, for our listeners, you can go to huntakiller.com/majority for 10% off your first box. They only accept 200 members per day, so hurry up to take advantage of this offer. That's huntakiller.com/majority for 10% off your first box. huntakiller.com/majority. Check that out. Here is Donald Trump. And they're very concerned, I think, about the numbers for Trump. Wrote an op-ed, I guess. I don't even know how to like characterize this. An op-ed was written with Trump's name attached to it. It was put in the USA Today. It is so full of lies and prevarications. I mean, I want to know if, like, I'm eligible to write an op-ed that says that people are being lined up and shot every dawn in the backyard of the White House.
Well, not yet, but when I did see the story about the embassy in Saudi Arabia, I literally got an erection. MBS is so cool.
We'll talk more about that in the fun half, but they are freaking out a little bit. And here is Trump at an Iowa rally, warning people of the left-wing mob ahead of the midterms. Here he is in Council Bluffs, Iowa. What's the green hats about? Do we know? Is that a? I don't think it is.
Like,
I don't.
Make America great again.
Oh, make America great with the John Deere motif. Is that it? All right.
You have the chance to stop the radical Democrats by electing a Republican House and a Republican Senate. Democrats have become totally unhinged. They've gone crazy. The Democrats have become too extreme. And they've become, frankly, too dangerous to govern. They've gone wacko. You don't hand matches to an arsonist, and you don't give power to an angry left-wing mob. And that's what the Democrats have become.
Now, if you're asking yourself, what does a left-wing mob sound like? Well, of course, it sounds... well, slightly different than this mob at that same speech.
How about Senator Feinstein? That's another beauty. That's a beauty. Did you leak the documents? What? No, I didn't. Did we leak? No. And I think they're talking about Feinstein. Can you believe it?
Yeah. There you go, folks.
A rare
Trump,
form.
Trump-Pence 2020, lock all the women up.
I wish the Democrats were an angry left-wing mob.
No kidding.
That would be sick.
That would be nice, it's pretty impressive. I think that they're going to lock her up is going to be, that's their calling card.
Got to play the hits.
Got to play
the hits.
Got to play the hits.
Like, it almost reminded me of Drain the Swamp in terms of how he accidentally finds something. Because when they started saying lock her up after Feinstein, he had a second of like, wait, what did she? Yeah, her too. Also, Pocahontas.
Yeah, I think he was pretty excited about that. I think he just realized, like, oh my God, if Warren runs, lock her up.
But he's totally gonna do that.
Oh, yes.
We need like a countdown clock to Trump doing that.
My opponent.
No, I was going to say that this morning, but I'm pretty sure he did that in 2016.
He already did that.
Of course. Of course he did.
Here is Rand Paul. This is the theme that they really want to push in the wake of this Kavanaugh thing, because they are afraid. Oh, look, it is clear, I think, even to the Republican leaders, and the issue is that they just don't have as much compunction about it anymore. That the only thing that animates their voters is either an animosity towards a woman or animosity towards a black person or animosity towards women or black people and, or to be fair, also brown people. And they're desperately trying to make it seem like they're also under assault from just Democrats in general. It's not quite as effective. It's much easier for them to be under this, because a woman who comes out and simply says it was inappropriate for this guy to assault me or to attempt to rape me, that is enough to get the fire lit under conservatives, because they feel completely aggrieved. generic Democrats, doesn't quite do it in the same way. And so they have to up the level of assault that supposedly is going on. Here is Rand Paul speaking of that on the Leland Conway show on WHAS in Kentucky. So,
talked to your wife just yesterday about the op-ed she wrote asking some of the, I guess, cooler heads in the Democratic Party, Cory Booker in particular, to call on his party to stop this, to stop fomenting this rabid reaction where, you know, you've been chased around airports. Senator McConnell, who was just on with us, was chased out of restaurants, and Senator Cruz was chased out of a restaurant, and then people that aren't even elected officials, like Sarah Huckabee Sanders, chased out of restaurants. And we've got members of the Democratic Party calling for more of that and asking people to stay in that mode. This is dangerous.
I think what people need to realize that when people like Cory Booker say, get up in their face, he may think that that's okay, but what he doesn't realize is that for about every thousand...
Pause it for 1 second. Now, somebody got off the script because Leland said, like, cooler heads like Cory Booker. And then Rand thought that Cory Booker was the problem because Leland forgets that in Rand's world, you've got to motivate the voters by talking about the black guy. They got confused. But nevertheless, I nitpick.
Hey, but what he doesn't realize is that for about every thousand person that might want to get up in your face, one of them is going to be unstable enough to commit violence. When I was at the ball field and Steve Scalise was nearly killed, the guy shooting up the ball field and shooting, I think five or six people were shot. Steve Scalise was almost killed. He was yelling, "This is for health care." He had a list in his pocket of conservative Republicans that he wanted to kill. You know, when I was attacked in my yard.
All right, pause it. Okay, stop it. We don't need to hear any more from this. Where could someone have possibly gotten the notion that the idea that you can go and take your gun to go shoot at members of our government because you don't like what they're doing? Oh, what's this? Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Rand Paul's tweet from June 23rd, 2016. Why do we have a Second Amendment? It's not to shoot deer. It's to shoot at the government when it becomes tyrannical.
That was a figure of speech in a certain sense.
Right.
Yeah, it's one thing when you're tweeting about your dad and guns and super predators, and then it's quite another when you blow leaves in your neighbor's lawn. And he needs to kick your ass.
Do you remember that?
I love how ironically Rand Paul has actually been physically assaulted for violating somebody else's property rights.
Right.
That's amazing.
Yes.
A bad libertarian.
But I wonder, I mean, I still can't get out of my head the massive media tour that Rand Paul did following the murder of Heather Heyer and by right wing conservatives who were trying to celebrate the heritage of the Confederacy. I mean, the image of him running around doing all those interviews still emblazoned in my mind.
Maybe I would have if my goddamn neighbor hadn't broken my ribs. Super concerned about civility and violence and all of that sort of stuff. But, you know, by the same token, that bitch had it coming.
He does imply elsewhere in that interview that the reasons his neighbor attacked him were political.
Like maybe it was more like on a neighborhood politics dispute.
The neighborhood politics of I hate you because you're one of the most annoying people on the planet Earth and you live next to me and I'm going to tackle you on a ride. I tell you, what was the goal? It was get Ronnie Casserole's and like an active, like somebody doing like landless movement in India at Ron Paul's neighbor as like liberation heroes.
All right, go ahead.
Like, I'm not endorsing that particular act of violence. I think armed insurrections only work when it's a critical mass of people. But if you want to talk about violence, the number of people who have been murdered by GOP policy just by being denied health care, Like, violence begets violence.
Without a doubt. But it really does seem to be the talking point that the Republicans are pushing. Here's Kellyanne Conway. Remember, her boss is Donald Trump. The we beat him up. It's okay to beat him up. If you get sued, I will pay for your lawsuit. I mean, we all remember Donald Trump, right? Kellyanne Conway is really upset about the lack of civility.
It didn't win, and that was Hillary Clinton. And, you know, many people are saying, let's be civil, let's get along, let's unify. But Hillary Clinton, she's agreeing with the Maxine Waters of the world, it appears. Listen to this next soundbite. She's saying civility is not an option.
You cannot be civil with a political party that wants to destroy what you stand for, what you care about. That's why I believe if we are fortunate enough to win back the House and or the Senate, that's when civility can start again.
Well, what does that mean exactly?
Pause it for 1 second. I'll tell you what it means. It's a delusion. It's the same delusion that Barack Obama had. Once we win, they'll learn their lesson. Or once they win, the fever will break.
It means both ways.
There was no way the fever wasn't going to break. But in the, as far as Clinton's concerned, if we win back the House, according to her, then the Republicans will be civil. That's a joke, of course. But let's hear how the Fox and Friends folks and Conway interpret this.
Well, what does that mean exactly, Kellyanne?
Look, she... Usually when she opens her mouth respectfully, she offends at least one half of the country, and she did it again. But I think her discourse now is a little bit dangerous. I don't like the implications there. It's one thing to call us deplorable, irredeemable, laugh at people who don't have all the privileges.
The other night, I mean, not that I, you know, I'm terribly sensitive about this, but I think Donald Trump called the Democrats evil.
Yeah, but with love.
Laugh at people who don't have all the privileges that she has had with her Ivy League law degree and through her marriage to a much more popular man who actually was a two-term president that she'll never be. I don't like that kind of talk, and I avoid it. My boss has called for civility. He's said that he represents all Americans. We don't run around asking people what their party affiliation is when he's cutting their taxes and allowing their small businesses to be free of regulations and growth. We're impervious to that.
What? But this is the line that they're pushing out because they're desperate. There's a little bit of desperation here.
Well, one part of that was true. Much more popular. Boom.
That was a really good burn, I gotta say.
That was just very, very bitchy.
She's such a good mean girl.
Yeah. I like the every time she opens her mouth, respectfully.
Right. But they're moving into the aggrievement posture now. Because which I think is encouraging, at least in terms of what is in what they're prepared to run on. Right now, like I said, I think I headlined this was Tammy Baldwin introduced a discharge petition, which basically going to force the Senate on voting on a bill that would overturn the Trump administration's expansion of so-called junk insurance plans. These are plans that under the Affordable Care Act could exist for 2 or 3 months at a time. You could sign up for these one time if you were transitioning between plans. They are regulated by the states, and so therefore they don't have the federal minimum standards for what in health insurance can be. Trump expanded these to where you could have them for a year at a time and you could renew, I think, up to 3 years. So Baldwin filed a discharge petition, which basically does an end round it's a parliamentary procedure which forces a vote. They will take the vote. It will focus on vulnerable Republicans who will either vote to support plans that allow for denial of coverage under pre-existing conditions, that don't cover all sorts of healthcare issues, or they'll vote against it and they'll force Donald Trump to veto the bill or they'll get rid of it. This is, you know, this has been, I think, not a coincidence that as soon as the Kavanaugh thing passes, they are going to pivot to health care, the Democrats. And in the meantime, what the Republicans will do is say that these Democrats are super mean.
Yeah, like that Hillary Clinton clip just now was kind of the epitome of the fact that no matter what the Democrats do, the Republicans are going to act like they're crazy leftist pitchfork carrying mob. So like, might as well give them that, you know.
Trump's op-ed claims that the Democratic proposal of Medicare for all would eliminate Medicare as we know it. So in other words, Medicare for all will make Medicare not for seniors anymore.
Then it becomes Venezuela.
Right. I mean, this is the type of, I mean, it's absurd, but that's the way it works. Folks, just a reminder, Hunt a Killer is a monthly subscription that sends you cryptic clues, objects, and letters so you can solve a crime in real time. It's so interactive that it feels real. Right now, just for our listeners, you can go to huntakiller.com/majority for 10% off your first box. They only accept 200 members per day, so hurry to take advantage of this offer. I'll tell you something. A lot of people are looking for some type of hobby to basically mitigate the intensity of the era. Hunting a killer might be not a bad way to do it.
Who did it? I don't know. There's clues.
But look. They only accept 200 members per day, so hurry to take advantage of this offer. That's huntakiller.com/majority for 10% off your first box. huntakiller.com/majority. I'm going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program. Just a reminder, it is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. It is Wednesday. Last night was Tuesday. Michael was sick yesterday, so there was no show.
Oh. No. Well, there was no...
Oh, you did make it?
I didn't do the warm-up show.
Oh, you didn't? Yeah. Okay. I wasn't sure. Because you were so sick yesterday.
I think I told you in the text that I was had a mild cold.
I generally don't read past the first line.
That's cool.
Of your text.
Oh, I like... That's another thing that we share in common about our communication.
That's why I only write one line.
That's good.
Can
you please... Hello.
Well, so what did you
Alex Perrine was in studio. We talked about Democratic Party. If it wanted to win, what would it do? There was a lot of fallout from the first round of voting in Brazil, which, of course, tacked on to the coverage we've been giving it for a while. Bernie gave a great foreign policy speech where he even did one of these for Lula da Silva with his when he got up and he was like, unjustly imprisoned.
Lula would have won.
Lula would have won, you pricks. And also, so we sort of connected a thread on that. And somebody pointed my attention that on top of everything else, Jimmy Dore even had a dumb segment on the car wash investigation, which led to the rise of a fascist candidate in Brazil and the imprisonment of Lula. So even there, there was a dumb segment to be commented on. And I tried to resist commenting on it and then did not resist it. And then we were like, let's do it in the post game. And then Matt was like, let's do it in the main show. So we did that.
There you go.
Yeah, it was a very good show.
And Jamie, did you do a segment on him or no?
Not this time.
I'm sorry to hear that.
But we did do a lot of other things this week on a spooky Halloween Antifada.
Why are you doing a Halloween Antifada in the first week of October?
Halloween lasts the whole month for me, right?
Okay, I'm sorry. I did not realize that.
Yeah, so we had our friend, Jacob Blumenfeld, recently got
Hello.
His doctorate from the New School. You're just doing that for every Jew now?
Yes. Well, if it's that kind of name, I mean, come on. Jacob Blumenfeld.
Doctors Bones and Blumenfeld.
I went to the New School to study communism.
Indeed, he did. He's got a book on the German philosopher Max Stirner coming out on Zero Books. We also have Dr. Bones, who is a bit of a swamp warlock. He got his doctorate in a graveyard and lives by Stirner's radical, egoist, communist philosophy. We brought them together, folks, for Socratic dialogue and to find out what happens when leftists stop being polite and start getting egoist.
And Matt, did you do a Halloween show too?
Yeah, we did a spooky version of a review of Corey Robbins' The Reactionary Mind.
That actually is pretty spooky.
It's pretty scary. It's and for patrons, I'm going to finish Hope Leslie Volume 1. The full audio, the first half of the audiobook should be up tonight, maybe tomorrow.
Scary.
Patreon.com/literary hangover.
Patreon.com/TMBS.
It was very good.
I forgot. That's how people find it. They find it at patreon.com/TMBS.
Oh, yes. And the same, patreon.com/TheAntiFada.
All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break.
Oh, my God. People actually tell their websites. It's so ridiculous.
All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break. Head into the fun half. Don't forget, join themajoritycourt.com. See you in a sec.